My name is Right. I am the voice of reason. I speak for the last crusade.
First things first. Why is it necessary at this point in history to declare a crusade? By what authority? Why a crusade with its implications of a holy war and not a political movement? And if it is a holy war, how is it to be fought? How now? How in times to come? At first glance, even after repeating goggle-eyed staring, the idea of a last crusade being decreed by private voices seems absurd. Crusades are a major wartime effort preached by popes to which princes and parliaments vow men in arms to travel overseas. Mere laymen gathering to talk, to teach, and to engender changes in society hardly seems to fit this description. Surely this is a political salon, nothing more. The question of necessity is one the reader may answer for himself to his own satisfaction merely by looking at the world around him. The world has grown violent, brutal, crass, ugly, and savage. Blood runs in the streets, and all whom we once trusted are rank and shameless deceivers. The family is broken, marriage desecrated, chastity forgotten. Professors corrupt, not educate. Artists deface, not create. Music shrieks. The flag is burned, the cross is trampled. Truth is flaunted, virtue is mocked, reason is dethroned. More to the point, the enemy is now openly calling for violence, assassinating police, and urging into our midst the jihadists and mass rapists of an alien and savage people meant to intimidate, humiliate, and conquer us. Peaceful means of regress still linger, and we must have first resort to them while time remains. But by any account, little time remains. No great public institution erected by our ancestors for the defense of our liberties remains uncorrupt. The legacy news media are wholly subsumed into the madness of political correctness and social justice warfare. The press and Hollywood, Wall Street and Washington, D.C., academia, men of letters, and men of the cloth have gathered to form an incestuous and unholy alliance against us. And all these have shown their true colors in their support for Islamic terror now, even as they supported communist terror in years past. Newsmen were silent about the genocide of Jews in Germany in my father's day, and are silent about the genocide of Uyghurs in communist China in this day. The unholy alliance of the politically correct, led by the press, makes open war against the police and border patrol, denude the military of men and morale. They overturn elections, corrupt courts of law, and orchestrate riots and looting that has set cities aflame coast to coast. They introduce a chaos of crime nationwide. Only the innocent need fear federal officers or state prosecutors' offices. The guilty are protected. Only the innocent need fear having lives ruined by persistent lies and libels in the press, hounding them to the end of time, while the guilty will be celebrated by chanting crowds and public murals. In these days, not only has the darkness grown, and tyrants, both great and petty, waxed insolent and bold, but also the light has waned, and no clear vision is revealed to the public view of any hope. All men of goodwill know, by instinct, that despotism, insanity, perversion, atheism, and lies are black-hearted, empty-headed, blind, and void of truth. And so all recoil with disgust at the latest offenses, outrages, and enormities perpetrated by ideologues at home and tyrants abroad. But the vision of what to erect in the place of the current sewer pit of our popular culture, the corrupt fever swamp of our current politics, and the haunted desolation of our current academia, has grown dim and confused. No one knows what the future is to be. The sad fact is that the classical liberal vision of a federated commonwealth ruled by a free and equal citizen soldiers answers only political and not philosophical questions. These questions are no longer pertinent. The current controversies embroiling our civilization today are called political questions, but none of them are. Not one. Whether sex is a social construct or a biological fact and spiritual reality is a scientific and theological question, not a political one. Whether life begins at conception is a biological question with ethical implications. Whether catamites can celebrate their unnatural alliance with sodomites via desecrating the sacrament of marriage is a question of canon law, where the secular power should have no voice at all. What reciprocal duties a man owes his family, clan, tribe, race, and nation versus what he owes all mankind is a philosophical question with legal implications. Whether all men are created equal is a religious question with political implications. Whether only black lives matter and white lives do not, hence, is also a religious question. Whether truth is absolute or relative is an ontological question. Whether reality, including the minds of man, is no more than matter in motion is a metaphysical question. Whether the free will exists or whether man has innate dignity, these are theological questions. Some of these questions have political implications, but none primarily can be decided by any discussion of political priorities, nor the controversies to be addressed by changes to military deployments, tax policies, trade, regulations, public works, or any of that business. Rather, all these questions involve changes to private life, hitherto considered outside the sphere of politics. Within politics, there is no serious attack being made against the idea of liberal democracy. Against the reality, yes, but not against the rubric. Even those working assiduously to undermine elections claim, at least in lip service, to be fortifying elections. The Democrats are destroying democracy in the name of democracy. So the name of democracy still holds good. No one is against the name of it, merely the reality. However, the faith of this conservative vision of liberal democracy, the vision of the American way, has largely failed. It no longer excites loyalty and trust. Because of this, certain fringe groups with no general appeal, such as monarchists or racists, national socialists or nationalist libertarians, solely because they are the sole voices offering an alternative to political correctness, now receive undue attention. Many an eager youth of sophomoric age, innocent and gullible, receives these old heretical ideas as if they were fresh and new. And the sophomore has never heard the centuries-old refutations of these tired and exploded theories long dead, and so he is baffled and convinced. Neither the conservatives, who are oddly dumbfounded when it comes to questions deeper than practical political questions, nor the libertarians, who are dumbfounded when practical political questions arise, have any answer to the deep questions of the day. The philosophical foundations of our civilization has been ruthlessly and deliberately undermined by the treachery of our intellectuals for over a century. The left of this generation is no longer concerned with merely political questions. A political question is one concerning the proper laws, customs, policies, and practices needed to secure the rights of man and maintain peace and order within the state. Politics is concerned with matters of property rights, family law, torts and crimes, war and peace, regularizing coin money and foreign trade, or with the maintenance of common property such as common greens and public parks. Those are political questions. Whether or not a pizza parlor can be forced against the conscience of the owner to cater to a mockery of a wedding celebrating sodomy, not matrimony, that is not a political question. It is an ethical, philosophical, and ultimately a theological question. What great conservative thinkers have failed to think is that the struggle of this generation is not right versus left, not individualism versus collectivism, not capitalism versus socialism, not republicanism versus despotism. Those battles are over. The left is no longer a political movement, but a religious one. Now it differs from Christianity in that it is an agnostic and atheistic religion, but it is a religion nonetheless, for it demands the whole person in its loyalty. It answers, or pretends to answer, all the deep questions to give life meaning, and it offers, or pretends to offer, a universal vision of man and his place in the universe. On all these points, the leftist religion is anti-Christian. It is not merely hostile to Christianity, but perfectly and symmetrically opposed to the church on all her points. Leftism is the church of darkness. The otherwise incomprehensible alliance of Marxism with Mohammedanism is clear once one sees them both as enemies of Christ. Only orthodoxy can defeat heresy. Only Christianity can defeat heathenry. Only chivalry can defeat the paganism. This is why conservatism, a political philosophy meant to address disputes on political matters, has proved so strong in defeating political foes, Nazis and Reds, but has proved so lax, confused, and incompetent when confronting theological foes, cultural Marxists, Greens, jihadists, and social justice warriors. Conservative philosophy, a faith in democracy and human decency, could and did defeat totalitarianism. conservatism could not defeat pornography. Decency could not defeat indecency. America could defeat Hitler, but not Hugh Hefner. The question of by what authority a crusade is announced has already been answered by history. If Peter the Hermit or Walter the Penniless can begin a crusade, then so can any Christian. But by all means, let us avoid the unhappy sequel of their ill-omened efforts by a proper understanding of which battles to fight and when. In a republic such as ours, any citizen is equal to the rank of highest nobility, possessing the right to bear arms and all other rights, duties, and privileges the ruling classes in the old world arrogated to themselves. And in the church, the laity are members of the mystical body of Christ no less than the clergy. The hand may pluck the sword from the scabbard before the head shakes itself clear of fog, and the head will not be clear of fog until the heart is sure. The second question is whether the church and all Christians and all men of goodwill, whatever their faith, have the right to engage in the struggle. Unbelievers and ill-wishers of the church already, even in this first hour, rush to say that all Christians, in order to be true to the teachings of Christ, must passively and with perfect pacifism accept whatever humiliation, degradation, dishonor, defeat, dismemberment, wound, pain, sorrow, and death the enemy seeks to inflict on us. It is all lies. This is neither in keeping with the words of Christ nor with the character of free men. While it is amusing when rank hypocrites who hate Christ and all his works attempt to use his words to deceive the followers of Christ into confusion, into submission and surrender, the stark fact is that pacifism and quietism has always been a special spiritual calling for hermits and holy monks, not a general moral rule for all men, not a general Christian teaching, and certainly not a policy of Christendom at large. St. Francis of Assisi was no more saintly than St. George, St. Demetrius, St. Florian, or any of the military saints, all of whom took up arms. Christendom historically has been governed not by pacifism, but by the just war theory, which limits violence to certain acceptable cases. Civilization acting in her own defense and preservation against craven and dishonorable barbarism without and craven and subversive corruption within is one of those cases. A final question is why men like me, who handle the pen, are sounding trumpets and pounding the tocsin when other men, younger and dowdier, will handle the sword. Is not all this clamor too warlike? The question mistakes the nature of war and the nature of men. War is not the clash of arms and the fall of bombs only. That is earthly war. All earthly wars are part of a spiritual war, a war against powers and principalities and rulers in high places, or if you will, a war against ideas and ideals that benight the hearts of men. For now, we fight a battle of words, hence poets and philosophers, men of contemplation, have the field. When the battle of swords begins, men of action must ride forth. This current war, this last crusade, is fought not just in the battlefield, not just in the ballot box, not just in the hometown and in the home, but also in every human heart. We men of goodwill have surrendered this spiritual battle without a word of protest for over 100 years to sadistic enemies who hate us, with the results now seen all around us. It will take more than mere physical struggle to right this. A crusade is not just a war, but also a holy endeavor, as much spiritual as it is earthly. Men of the pen are like the Clarks of the Middle Ages. Those too old and gray to fight must lend their strength to the cause in other ways, with words, with encouragement, perhaps with enlightenment. We are the watchmen on the tower, and our duty is no less crucial than that of the soldier in the field. At the moment, the enemy bends all his powers to obscuring the truth, darkening the mind, and dulling the eye. The foe knows that once our full strength is unleashed, his defeat is swift. Indeed, the true enemy, the enemy behind our enemy, he knows his defeat was already consummated at Calvary. So we must raise the lamp for the fighting men to see the foe. Merlin did not handle the lance, nor did he touch the great sword Excalibur. His mission was to row Arthur out onto the lake where the hidden sword was found, for Merlin knew where it was, and Arthur did not. The race riots, prompted by the secular enemy, are openly violent. Openly violent as well are the repeated mass murder of innocent civilians, women, and children by craven and sadistic Mohammedans, whose efforts, by no coincidence, are lauded and applauded by the secular enemy at home. The enemy is willing to use open violence in the form of corrupt federal agents and mad dog prosecutors where and when the defiance swells against their lies and madness. any one of us could have his door kicked down by the FBI tomorrow. The enemy libels any protest against their abuse of power to be an insurrection. As ever fewer honest men are willing to submit meekly to their empire of lies, the enemy, craving for blood, for the sight of burning cars and dumpsters, for the sight of bleeding faces of women and children screaming in pain and sorrow, will grow in their sick and hellish souls. The enemy hates himself, but never blames himself. And so he hates the truth, life, and liberty, hates you, hates your children, hates decency, hates beauty, and hates God most of all. If the enemy can tell utterly absurd lies about men and nature, about science, about politics, about economics, about history, he can compel his victims to repeat those lies and to pretend to believe them. And this gives the enemy a sick and sadistic sense of power. And his hatred for himself is transferred to you and your children and to all of us. And the suicide he seeks is held at bay for one more day and one more hour. What the enemy seeks is submission. Now, much ink has been spilled on the question of whether the enemy are sincere, whether they believe their own absurd and unbelievable lies. I say the question is not merely moot, it is meaningless. If a man attempts to deceive himself, he cannot be talked out of his position, because if facts and evidence are presented, facts and evidence will be ignored. If you present an argument so obvious and so evident that all honest men must agree, the self-deceiving deceiver will merely deceive himself again, not be honest, and not agree. So if a confirmed zealot cannot be talked out of his position, his sincerity or lack thereof is moot. Sincerity means a man comes honestly by his belief. It means he is honest in intent, even if he is honestly mistaken. It means he will change his mind, reluctantly or not, upon discovering his mistake. But this enemy is not honest in intent. This enemy craves a narrative, that is, a falsehood. He craves to comfort himself and to prop up his crippled self-image. Reality will not flatter him. He seeks unreality. Such men will not gracefully and with goodwill release their stranglehold on power. They don't even clean up after themselves after protest marches. They have been thwarted in small things now, and so they resort to a few riots, burning a few neighborhoods, and applauding and encouraging a few thousand deaths by jihadists. When they are thwarted in large measure, the violence in large measure will grow. So now is the time to prepare. Now is the time to stock supplies and sharpen the sword. More to the point, now is the time to clarify and reaffirm what we believe. The fortress called civilization is coming under ever more dramatic attack. It is time to check the foundations, which are the abstract notions of philosophy and the concrete tenets of Christ on which Western civilization is based. Nonetheless, an open war is not yet upon us. The clouds darken and gather and a few drops fall, but the storm is not yet. When the storm breaks, it is too late to thatch the roof. That is why the Last Crusade starts now.